briefly, I'm originally from Canada. I'm currently teaching in Germany, moving to Belgium in a month. And for the last 8 years, I've become very interested in how to bring integral theory into classrooms with young children. Most often, I've been working between with ages 8 to 10, roughly, so usually in primary school, grades 2, 3, 4, grade 5. So my talk is Integral Theory for Kids, Scaffolding Complex Thought, but I actually wanted to start by just talking about what this is not. So this is not an attempt to rush kids through development to get them to teal as fast as possible. That's not what this is. It's also not trying to, like, in a greenhouse, artificially grow development that's not ready. For me, this is about respecting kids where they are at their developmental stage, but handing them tools that they can access a lot more of where they already are. So for me, I've taken on the game, I guess you could call it, of attempting to engineer the education in my classroom to be kind of like an art or design app on an iPad. So I don't know if you've ever sat down with some of these things on an iPad, but no matter what level of artistic skill you have, if you can glide your finger across the screen, you can create something like really aesthetically beautiful. That's kind of my attempt with my teaching to weave in integral theory to create an experience for students where no matter what they bring to it, they can engage with something really incredible. So I attempt to engineer my teaching like that. This first part isn't actually in the Aqual map. I will show you a few examples later of using different pieces of Aqual. This one just came spontaneously one day to me. And this idea of using spectrums is attempting to take the abstract and put it into the concrete. And that's the underlying piece with all of this work I've done. I made the mistake in my first year of teaching of actually trying to teach quadrants to 8-year-olds. And I was really cute, and I'm glad I did that, but that bombed horrendously and taught me instantly, like, this is not the way to go about this. But what I did learn from that was I don't teach them the abstract. I just make this concrete, something they can actually put in their hands and to play with. So this is the, like, bane of all teachers' existence, which is the indoor recess. So when you see that it's raining outside and the children need to stay inside, there's often a lot of problems that proliferate from this. So the class I had this year was actually quite a challenging class, and there were often problems during indoor break. And this just kind of came spontaneously to me, but on the board, I just wrote this line of self-regulation and this line of choice. And I said, like, you guys see what goes on during indoor breaks, right? Like, I give you, like, total choice about what you do when you're in here. You can play games, draw. I even let you, like, run around, do whatever. So you can have total choice in here. What sucks is when it slides to the other end of the spectrum and someone else chooses what you get to do. And that someone's going to be a teacher who's on duty that's not me, who's going to come see you being a jerk, and they're going to say, hey, you sit at your desk, or hey, you put that away. They're imposing their will on this student's choice. So I said, like, you kind of get that, like, your level of self-regulation, which is something we talk about as a character development strength, like, you realize the more in control you are, the more choice you have, right? And they're like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. I was like, and you get that the more out of control you are, at some point you, like, lose control of this. And I'm actually, like, sliding magnets along the, like, whiteboard showing them this. Like, you see the relationship between these things, right? And for a class who had had, like, a lot of difficulties with this, they were like, oh, yeah, okay, like, I kind of get that now. And I added this third line of, like, fun. And I was like, and I'll save you, like, putting everything in place, but kids could come up and explain what was happening at indoor breaks by saying, like, okay, so yeah, like, at some point, being out of control is actually really fun. Like, totally. That's why we're going out of control, chasing each other, screaming around the room. That is fun. But that's not a very long-term fun. Because that fun, well, at some point the teacher comes in, stops that fun, we lose control over what we get to do, and things become very boring. So we like talked this through, had a little like 15-minute strategy session at the start of this break, and we realized that the maximum experience for an indoor break is being fairly in control, which allows you full choice, which is the most fun thing for the longest period of time. So this idea of like breaking down this abstract concept that like to a more traditional teacher might just come down to like behave, be quiet, calm down, turned into this exploration that we could do together. This has been since adapted to all kinds of lessons within my class. We've used it to explore concepts in science of cause and effect. We've used it in English to look at different characters and their dynamics of how they act. But most interestingly, this was incredibly useful for a situation last year with a group of 8 girls who were co-bullying each other. And they were actually able to sit down over like the course of 2 lunch breaks with me and map out like 12 different factors that were in play and like literally slide the faders up and down of like, well, this is why this is happening. And at least for those 2 remaining months of the year with me, there were no more issues because they were actually able to concretely show what had been abstractly happening between them. I do want to stick to my time, but I'm going to present 3 things, so that was the first one. And I would actually like to give you guys just like a minute to let that land. So I'm going to just give you guys a minute to turn and talk with the person beside you, just your impression on that, or if you have kids, how you could possibly see that being of use to you. And then I'll move on to the next piece. And I really hate to pause the conversation, but I'll share 2 more ideas with you, and then if we want to explore it further in the chat afterwards, we can. So here's 1 part of the actual Aqua map that I use with students, where I will customize quadrants depending on what we're studying. And I'll give you 2 examples from writing. So for me, if you come to my workshop this afternoon on the hero writing, I'll explain this in a little more depth. For me, every writing unit, you have 2 muscles. You have an ideas muscle, and you have a words muscle. Typically, if you went to a traditional school, you probably only ever had your words muscle worked, your spelling, grammar, punctuation, word choice, these sorts of things. Totally still important, but that's just 1 of your 2 muscles. If you don't also buff up your ideas muscle, you don't really have anything worth saying or worth communicating through written communication. So we always start every unit saying, hey, we need to work both muscles. And I've found that quadrants have been a great idea for exploring and building that ideas muscle with students. So I'll talk about persuasive writing really briefly. If you glance at this, hands up if you see the saxophone player. Hands up if you see the woman's face. Cool. So to a 9-year-old, that's a psychedelic experience that you can be, 2 people can look at the same thing and see something totally different. So that's kind of like my drop into like, okay, you're going to write persuasive pieces, like persuasive letters, you have to understand that you're not writing to convince them why you want this. You need to write this to convince that person that they want this for their reasons. And they might be very different reasons than yours, as different as a saxophone player to a woman. So the next logical step is to say, okay, you get into a hotel room, 9-year-old, what do you see there? And their answer is trampoline. And I say, do you think that's the same answer that your 45-year-old parent has? And they're like, no, they totally see a place to like not have your feet on and like sleep and rest. It's like, okay, so you get the idea that like you can see something totally different than your parents or your audience? Cool. And again, I'm dealing with 9-year-olds, so it's still topics within their realm of care. So when we get to persuasive writing, it will be often things like, I want a dog. Okay, cool. So if your audience is your parents, how would having a dog improve your parents' feelings? How would having a dog improve your parents' relationships? How would it improve the stuff they get up to, their activities? How would it improve their environment? And really quickly, once you give kids this, they can fill in multiple examples within each box. But my experience had been previously, if you just say, hey, how would having a dog be good for your parents? Without that, like, starter, they don't get to those rich answers that they get to when you hand them this first. So this acts as, like, the scaffold for them to access that higher level of thinking. Same thing in story description. So if we're writing stories, I think every teacher at some point has said to a student, like with your story, hey, this is good, but could you add more detail? And I caught myself saying this to students. And I was like, well, what do I mean by detail? And it's like, well, either describing the thoughts and feelings, describing the dialogue and the relationships, describing action and objects, or describing setting and context. And the way I introduce this to students is I just say, pick any book, draw like a four-quadrant cross, read each sentence, and then mark which quadrant that hit. And within like 2 minutes, the kids can totally identify, like, oh, yeah, these are thoughts and thought sentences. These are feeling sentences. These are action sentences. These are describing the objects. These are describing the dialogue. And then when they go apply that to their writing, that's now on their radar of like, oh, I can't just talk about actions and objects, which is the typical 9-year-old approach to a story. He did this, then he did this, then they ran here, and then they got this, and then they did this. But when you add in these other pieces, it like really fills out their writing and makes something incredible, giving them really interesting ideas and enhancing those words. I will stick to my time, but I'll give you guys 45 seconds to digest that one, and then I'll share one last piece with you. Cool. And if you can hear me do a waterfall and go, shh. Cool. It's one of my attention grabbers with my students. Just make a waterfall, and then it just sounds like everyone's shushing each other. So lines and levels. I do actually address a lot of the integral lines with students. So these are just three examples with images created by my wonderful wife for kinesthetic, cognitive, and interpersonal skills. And I will go, I'll go into some detail and like give them some words to connect these abstract ideas to. So I'll say like, okay, with kinesthetic skills, could be talking about strength, control and balance, could be flexibility, could be endurance, could be speed. What does low-level kinesthetic skill look like? What kind of characters would have that? What does medium kinesthetic ability or skills look like? What kind of characters embody that? What kind of characters have high kinesthetic skills in these areas? What are some characters that embody that? And then we start giving characters report cards where we'll actually say like, yeah, well, actually they're really high in kinesthetic, but medium kind of cognitive, but just like socially it's atrocious, like low interpersonal skills. And we'll actually go through like books we're reading, TV shows, and inevitably somehow every single year it's come back to The Simpsons, and we've given each Simpsons character their own report card in their lines and levels of like, and having debates like, well, is Lisa actually medium interpersonal? Like, she seems to understand it cognitively, but the actual way she acts out with people is very different, and have these kinds of debates. So, how much time is there, Miriam? 5? Cool. I'll give you guys 1 minute to digest that, and then I'll close up. Cool. And if you can hear me do a waterfall, Cool. So in summary, just to go back over some of these main points I've said, at first I tried to force integral, but then I quickly learned not to force integral where it doesn't fit, but rather bring in elements of the integral theory where it actually acts as a scaffold for students to be able to access more complex thought, wider thought than they're capable of if you just leave them to themselves. But when you hand them the scaffold, they can actually like scale great heights with it. I've frozen. So yeah, just in summary, back to this idea of I'm doing this not to purposely accelerate growth, but again, to just meet students where they are at in their developmental trajectory. So I don't tell them like, oh, you can't write about wanting a dog because that's actually really egocentric of you. It's like, no, totally, you want a dog. I totally get that. And as a 9-year-old, here's like the widest amount of bandwidth you can approach getting a dog from. And like trying to hand them the tools in order to be able to do that. And again, it's really just about respecting where they are at. And essentially just trying to give them that horizontal experience of really feeling into all the territory of being an 8 or 9-year-old without this kind of limited view, which I know through my schooling experience was definitely much more of what I focused or what I experienced. And just finally, I know there is the reinventing education discussion at the start. Myself and a friend who's an integral skeptic who doesn't really buy into this have started a podcast called Reinventing Education. It's in its early days at this point, but basically we've started from the idea of what is a school education for, and then working out from there about, well, then, what could school look like? So if you're interested, feel free to reach out to me or find us on iTunes, that kind of thing. Thank you very much.